Don't adjust that station. You have the correct station. That's correct. You got 98.7 KISS FM, and you got the number one talk show Sunday mornings in the tri-state area. That is correct. Open line. To join us in discussion, please give us a call at 1-800-288-KISS. You can also email us at openline@987kissfm.com, or you can fax us at 212-242-0706.
I want to welcome you back to Open Line, Sunday, May 21st, 2006. I'm Bob Pickett, along with the one and only, I said the one and only third answer, Mr.
Brother M2Me.
Yes, indeed. And the navigator, Bob Slade, is still out. We are talking about a subject, ladies and gentlemen, that we rarely talk about, and we're giving it the profile that it deserves, prostate cancer. And we have as our guest Dr. Dominic Savada of Beth Israel Hospital out of Newark, New Jersey. Tombs, let's continue our discussion.
Yes, you know what? As a matter of fact, the phones are off the hook. Why don't we do this? Why don't we go to the phones and entertain some callers who have questions, and then we'll come back. Again, if you want to reach us, 1-800-288-KISS. 1-800-288-KISS. We're going to go to line one and speak to JT from Queens. Good morning. Open line.
Good morning. How y'all doing?
Good, brother. How you feel?
I feel all right. I had a stroke since I talked to y'all last
night. Oh, brother. JT. Sorry to hear that. How you doing?
JT, we talked to you about a month ago, man, and you were as fiery as usual.
Yeah, but you know, getting to this prostate thing, I'd like to ask the doctor a question. 5 months ago, I did a blood test, and it was all the way up. And then after that, 5 months ago, it was down to 2. The first time, it was all the way up to 6. This time I go back and take the blood test, it seems to be still stable.
With the bouncing around of the PSAs, you see a lot of that, and there's two different thoughts. Basically, what I usually do is if the blood work is elevated at all, I usually do a biopsy. The main reason why is when they did the studies originally, looking at who needs a biopsy and who doesn't, that's the way they did did the protocols. A lot of doctors say we know a lot of times inflammation causes the PSA to go up, so they give you antibiotics first, and then they'll wait for it to go down. And if the PSA goes down enough, they say let's just keep an eye on it. And it's not that's certainly another way of doing it as well. And if you do it that way, I don't know if you're missing some cancers, but if the PSA goes down a lot, the original concern of the higher PSA isn't as great as it once was.
Does age have something to do with that?
A lot of it does. Yeah, I mean, if you're the other thing about PSAs in general, if you're over 70, we used to say, or maybe if you have, let's say, you have 10 years or less to live, it's not so good to do the test necessarily, because you might find a prostate cancer that the guy's never going to die of. He might die of something else. You know, if you just recently had a stroke and you have other medical issues going on right now, you know, it's probably not quite as important, because usually the prostate cancer grows very slowly.
I had 2 biopsies.
I'm sorry?
I had 2 biopsies.
And they were both negative?
Yeah.
All right, so now that you had a couple of biopsies and they were both negative, you know for sure there wasn't a lot of cancer there, because they would have found it if there was.
Right.
So if you have anything left behind, it's going to be small enough where it probably won't bother you. So in your case, now the PSA is back down to a low number, I probably wouldn't do anything more than that either.
All right, JT. Thank you very much. And JT, stay well, man. We wish you
well. Yes, sir, brother. Come on, we need well. You, man. All right, we're going to go Gerald, line 7. This is Bill from Brooklyn. Good morning. Open line.
Good morning.
Yes, sir, brother.
Yes, good morning to you and the family.
Yes, sir.
I hope Brother Slay is on the mend.
Oh, yes, he is, brother, and we appreciate your concern.
Yeah, I'm glad that you're still with us, too.
Okay.
Okay, now, thyroid count. Can the doctor address that?
What was that again, brother?
Thyroid counts. I don't know. I don't know what you mean, brother, by that. Can you explain that a little bit more?
Those people who have thyroid conditions, they take a physical and the doctor sees that their thyroid count was high. They give them medications for that. Can that have any
impact on prostate cancer?
Yes.
No, it should be unrelated. Most things are pretty separate, and anything like that would be not related at all to the PSA or bouncing around of the PSA or anything like that. So it should be a separate issue.
All right. Thank you very much for that call, Tombs.
Okay. We're going to go to line 3. This is Roxanne from the Bronx. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Roxanne. How are you?
Hi. Good morning. How are you?
What's your question for Dr. Savada?
Well, actually, it's a question regarding an event that I'm having with CTG Athletics on Labor Day at Pelham Bay Park.
Okay.
I'm working with Mr. George Medina of Controlling the Game Athletics. And he knows this is a pressing issue affecting our community. So we're having an event, a softball tournament on Labor Day in Pelham Bay Park. to address prostate cancer and make the community aware of how it is affecting us. And I was thinking maybe the doctor could come out and speak and try to educate our community on the issues.
All right, but we don't know if he can do that. But I tell you what, why don't you hold on the line, and someone's going to pick up and take your number. Just hold on for right now, okay?
That's right.
Great, I appreciate that.
All right, sister.
Open line, I commend you on all of your work.
Oh, you're very kind.
Yeah, thank you.
Brother Gerald, going to line four. This is Lauren from the Bronx. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, sister.
Good morning, Lauren. How are you?
Hi, how are you? Okay. I love you guys. Just let me say that I've been listening to you since I'm 20. I'm now 36.
Okay. Oh, you've been listening to Pickett that long. Okay. No,
but I love it anyway, every Sunday. Good morning, doctor. Just to address the prostate cancer issue, I work at a world-renowned center here in New York City, and it kills me when I hear and get the phone call from a man who knew that he had prostate cancer but waited and tried to do herbal treatments and things like that to get the counts down. I am so shocked sometimes, and I can't help them because now the disease has gone to the bones or wherever else, and it's metastatic and it's out of control.
So, sister, you basically, your question is about the herbal approach, okay? You mean the alternative approaches to cancer, and what is the doctor's opinion?
Well, that as well as as men being in denial, just that comment of them being in denial and the insurances that New York City has now turned over to the HMO plans. And if you don't get a good one and you don't pick a good one, they're putting you in one regardless of whatever the factors may be. That's basically just
okay.
My comment. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, one of the forms of therapy for prostate cancer is called watchful waiting. Basically means don't do anything. Another thing that sometimes people do is watchful waiting with curative intent, meaning let's not do anything for now, and if something changes, then we'll try to cure you. And honestly, I put herbs in that category because I don't know what the herbs are, what they're doing, and you have to be careful because some herbs have estrogens in them that'll actually lower the PSA, not treat the cancer really, but it may look like you're getting treated or the PSA is going down.
A false reading.
So
though.
It is a false reading. You know, there's some medicines we give for prostates that actually make the PSA go down that doesn't treat the cancer. So I tell patients that want to do that, you know, it's not my recommendation, but, you know, certainly they still have prostate cancer. I'll be happy to keep an eye on them. And I have several like that right now that are young people. And I'm hoping that, you know, they will have something done. And usually when the PSA goes up from, let's say, 4 to 5 or 4 to 7 or 4 to 10, it scares them and then they have something done. And some of the newer studies say, you know, in some patients you can watch them, which is good for patients that have a very, very small amount of cancer. But then somebody else with maybe a little bit more cancer might say, well, look at that study. Well, it's not really you, though. So it's, I feel the same way you do. You know, get your therapy, you get it done with, and hopefully with the surgery, you know, after surgery, things get better and better afterwards.
Hey.
And,
that's right.
You know, just don't wait. I don't see a big point in waiting right now.
Look, if Giuliani can survive prostate cancer, a lot of us black folks can survive as well. Dr. Bottom, let me ask you this question. In terms of the robotic procedure that you've mentioned, I need you to respond to 2 points. One, in the metropolitan area, what hospitals are providing this kind of protocol procedure? And secondly, why would you recommend this protocol procedure?
Well, good. You know, there's about 400 of these robots worldwide. The ones in the New York City area that are the busiest, and there's a lot of them that also do, but maybe not quite to the extent, or maybe they do, and I just don't know about it, so I don't want to talk bad about any place. But the busiest ones are in Manhattan or Columbia and Cornell. I know they do a fair amount at Beth Israel in Manhattan as well. In New Jersey, it's Hackensack, Newark Beth Israel, and Robert Wood. I know there's a center in Long Island. I think it's North Shore. There's something else in Westchester, which I'm not sure of. You know, there is a website, not through me, through the robot company, DaVinciProstatectomy.com.
Beat that?
Yeah, it's at DaVinciProstatectomy.com, DaVinci, ProstaTectomy, TECTOMY. And also our website, NJUrology.com, like New Jersey Urology, NJUROLOGY, that has links to that site. You know, basically, that's any place, any doctor that's done at least, say, 20 of these operations is on the list, and at least it gives you an idea of somebody who has some experience doing it.
And how many have you done up to date?
We're doing more and more. I think up to 140-something operations now with the robot, and about 3/4 of those for prostate cancer. Let me answer the big thing. Why does somebody want to have the robot? It's nice, you know, and it's technology is great, but if it doesn't really give you a better outcome, you know, then why have it done, or why did I learn it? Right away from the first operation, there was a lot less blood loss. We used to donate blood for patients, and they often would get it back.
Mm-hmm.
And after three patients that we did, they had some blood loss, but very little, and they didn't even get their own blood back. So let's say, oh, well, we really don't need to do that anymore. And we've done about 110 prostate cancer operations, and nobody's ever gotten blood back since then. And after three, we stopped doing the donation, so there's no medicines to take to get your blood counts higher. Everybody, since the blood loss is so little, they go home and they feel better right away without and the fact of not needing to get blood, it really is a big thing that comes off of their mind. The other nice thing is when the surgery is done with the small incisions, usually you go home right away. So instead of being in the hospital 3-4 days with the open surgery, I looked at my last, 80 or so patients, and 93% went home the next day. Occasionally guys have gas pain and it keeps them there 2 days. But really the recovery is remarkable compared to the open version. And the pain pills they go home on, a lot of times just Tylenol or Advil,
right.
Occasionally
something
and a little bit stronger.
And for me, the personal experience was because it ran through the family. And then other people, I mean, I don't know too many brothers that don't know somebody, if it's not a family member or someone that hasn't experienced or know someone else involved with prostate cancer. But the thing that impressed me the most after the operation was because everyone I had talked to, they talked about, the recovery period. After the operation, man, it was really hard. And I was out of there in 2 days. And that was only, I couldn't go out the next day because the impact of the gas from the operation, but not from any pain. And the fact is that there's no incision. I want you to explain that. Most people, there's this big incision that goes down the middle of the stomach. I have five little prongs, Pickett, because that's the only thing that went into and through the belly.
Right, exactly. We put a little quarter-inch and half-inch instruments inside, and then we'll take the prostate out of the belly button in a little bag, and really the incisions are almost non-existent. Because of that, a lot of guys are going back to work in 1 or 2 or 3 weeks and not 1 or 2 months. So the other really nice thing, the more of these that we do, we look back at our results, and the urinary control and the cancer control is at least as good as open surgery, but now they're getting even better. So a lot of guys, even at 1 month, are getting full control of their urine back. A lot of guys are getting their erections back at 1 or 2 months and not, 1 or 2 years. So it's when you can say not only is it nice and it's high tech, but it really does provide a better operation, in my opinion, at least.
Okay, so, good. We're going to go to another call here. Brother Gerald, line 5. This is Merle from New Jersey. Good morning. Open line.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. How you doing?
Good morning.
Hello?
Yeah, we're doing good. What's your question?
Yes, I have two questions. First, I have family history of prostate cancer through my father. Thank God.
Excuse me, Gerald. Whoever's in the background, could you ask him to keep it down a little bit? Because.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Like I said, I had history of prostate cancer through my father, and thank God he has survived. But I have three questions if I'm trying to ask.
Well, we can get two, brother. Three is a bit much.
Okay. Well, first question is, what is the importance of the prostate to our body function, and if it's removed, how it will affect us? And if I can get this one in, if I've never diagnosed with prostate cancer, will it jump me and get to my son or anything like that?
Good question, brother.
Thank you very much for the call. We do appreciate it.
The first question was, what's the function of the prostate? And really the only real function is when we ejaculate and the semen comes out, all that juice around the sperm is from this prostate. So it's really important in having the sperm develop in the woman and being able to have children. Once you're done having children, then it really doesn't serve any real purpose. The only big thing, and the one thing that does change after prostate cancer surgery, is the juice that you make when you ejaculate is gone because there's no more prostate. So medically, it's not an issue at all, but for some men, it is a big deal. And I always tell patients that are going to have surgery, hopefully you'll get the sensation in the penis is always there, and the ability to have an orgasm is always there as well, but the juice will be missing for sure. And then the ability to actually get firmness and get the penis hard enough for an erection, that part is more variable. But the juice, no matter what, that'll be missing afterwards.
Yeah, but on that point, though, and I know this from a friend of ours, you can provide them with some sort of medicine that would allow them to obtain an erection?
Hopefully, if you catch it early enough and people have good erections to start with, they'll probably get it back, especially if they're younger. Now, the guys that don't, there's things you can do still. So there's always things you can do to be able to have erections afterwards. Sometimes, often, the Viagra and those kind of medicines like that. There's other things you can do as well, even if those medicines don't work.
So yeah, but that's a new technique that you recommend.
He's talking about the needle. I've told him. But also...
this thing. Basically, it's important. You know, first thing is get your, don't die. I mean, because if you're dead, the erections don't matter anymore.
But there's
and then the urinary control is important, and
an improved method with the prosthesis that a lot of people don't know about.
Exactly.
A prosthesis?
Yes, sir, brother.
A penis prosthesis?
Oh, yeah, well, no,
yes, brother.
If
listen and learn. Okay? you may need this one day. Go ahead, brother. See, he got quiet. That's it. All them questions. Wait a prosthesis. We're laughing, but you know what?
This is so a very good that we're having this.
Because a lot of brothers out there, that's a concern, man.
Right.
That is. Okay? And
let him get to the prosthesis, brother, and you can talk.
If all else fails, there's actually a pump. It's a plastic pump that you could actually put inside, and once you do that, the patient can physically pump it up, and then they'll get a full erection. And then once they're done, they'll be able to hit the valve and unpump it up. And
now, what's important? So this is the first thing in Pickett's mind, and everybody else listening, because that's when you first talked to me. I said, "Oh, this is not some pump you hold in your hand, y'all, brothers. Okay, it's inserted in." The testicle sac, right?
Exactly.
And you pump it from there, Pickett. You're not walking around with a pump. Even Gerald's left. Puts everybody at ease. See, I'm a real cat. Put everybody at ease, okay? The pump, you're not walking around with a pump, brothers.
But Tim, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to break away from the mystique of all of this and let you know that this is very real. This happens to people, but there are ways in which you can overcome it, but you got to be willing to go and get screened.
Okay, now we're going to go. We got how much time, Gerald?
We're
going to go to line six, Brother Gerald. This is Prince from New Jersey. Good morning. Open line.
Yeah, Prince is hanging out in Newark?
Well,
peace.
Prince?
Good morning.
Hey, Prince, good morning. How are you?
Peace. Listen, I'm calling first of all, let me say good morning to Dr. Zalato.
Thank you.
Toombs and the rest of you brothers.
Yes, sir.
It's a pleasure, man. But I got a concern. I know some brothers in particular. I have a family member that's incarcerated. And you know that the health care in the prison system is not really all up to par.
Right.
Now, I would like to know, what can he do, because I know he's listening right now, what can he do to regarding treatment and therapy to better get his cancer in remission?
So he has cancer right now and he's incarcerated?
Yes.
It's prostate cancer?
Yes, it is prostate cancer.
They should still have access to the same doctors. When I was over in Indiana doing my training, we were at the county hospital and we treated a lot of inmates and we did all kinds of big surgeries and stuff. So they should get the same care that I would get or you would get. So if he's not, it's a problem. But just based on my past experience, it was the same kind of doctors treating at one hand the university patients that were coming in from all over, and then they were going over to the county hospital and treating patients that were incarcerated. So it should be, should be getting the same care, and if not, it's definitely an issue.
Well, what stage is his cancer in, brother?
Well, I'm not really too sure, but he did mention something about I'm not sure if this is the proper term, angioplasty operation.
That sounds like a heart.
Heart.
Angioplasty.
That sounds like heart?
That sounds like a heart problem and so forth. But Dr. Potter, he raises a good point, though. Are the folks who are incarcerated, are they entitled to the same level of not only screening, but the protocol procedure that you've outlined?
They should be. I can't speak exactly for whatever hospital takes care of them, but they should be. And if the doctor's there to provide it, then they should. And if they don't provide it, they should be able to offer it and then get them to a place that does it in the same way. So, I can't answer because I don't know.
Okay, hold on. Brother?
I want to put him on hold.
Why don't you hold? Are you there?
I think we have dropped him.
Oh, wow.
Okay. We'll find out. I'm going to place a phone call to the Department of Corrections, and we'll have an answer sometime next week.
That's a good point he's making.
That's an excellent point.
I'm sure that could be with a lot of inmates. And since we're on this subject, we need to cover everybody.
And they listen to us, too.
Yes, sir, brother. We're going to go line eight. This is Joshua from Brooklyn. Good morning. Open line.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Hey, Joshua, how are you?
I'm doing great.
What's your question for Dr. Savada?
Part of my question was already answered. explaining to the men who have it or think they have it, the purpose of it. Because I had the prostate removal procedure. But the question of the purpose of it came later.
Mm-hmm.
And now, while it's not a main issue, it is an issue.
Psychologically.
Psychologically, yes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And sometimes I say to myself that had I known that in the beginning, maybe I wouldn't have gotten it.
And then so, you may not be here.
That's true.
See, no, brother. But being alive is first and foremost.
Yeah, I understand.
Don't worry about something coming out of you, man. Stay on this planet as long as you can.
I understand that.
See, women have been going through this a long time with breast cancer.
Well, that may be true for women, but, you know, as a male, you know, we look at it differently than that in some aspects, because I know several men who've had this prostate removal issue, and their lives have actually changed completely. I mean, you know.
How so? How so, Josh?
Well, they don't communicate with people the same way they used to. Their whole connection with people changed.
Well, is that let me ask you this. Is that are we talking about just the fact that the prostate being removed or the absence of an erection?
No. Well, it's a combination of both. It's,
okay.
If they had known that the purpose of the prostate.
Okay, can I just cut you off for a second? Is it okay? I'm sorry, but just as far as the erections, what some people don't understand, they say, you know, even guys that lose the erections, if you get radiation or something else, you're not going to lose them day one, but wait a year or 2 years, and that radiation will damage those nerves, and you'll probably lose them anyway.
Yeah.
If that cancer grows, you're probably going to, you know, it'll kill those nerves, and you'll probably lose it anyway. So it's something that, I think a lot of it is education on our part, explaining all that, because if you know what you're getting into, it's not so bad when you're going through it later.
You know, we're going to come back, Dr. Savard.
We will. Hold on. I want to hold this. I think we... are you still there?
He's gone.
He still there? Are you still there, brother?
Joshua, you there?
You did?
Yes, I'm still here.
Yeah, I want you to hold, brother, because you know what? Let's not dismiss this so late. This is very deep for a lot of men.
I know.
And we should... hang on, brother. We're going to come back to you after the break.
That's right. We're going to come back with more of Dominic Savard out of Beth Israel Hospital in Newark, talking about his robotic technique and prostate cancer. Stay with us. We'll be right back.